Hello everyone, it's George from Ireland. Welcome back to the channel again. This video is about whether there's going to be peace in Ukraine along the lines adumbrated by President Volodymyr Zelensky. Up until now, he said he wouldn't negotiate with Russia until the Russians unconditionally evacuate all the illegally occupied territory. But he's changed his tune. And the interesting question is why. He now says that he would be willing to just leave the ceasefire line, not try and retake the illegally occupied territories, but still not recognize it as Russian, so long as Ukraine is allowed to join NATO. They have that security guarantee. Because, of course, if there is a peace, even a permanent peace, on the base of the ceasefire line, even if Ukraine were to recognize de jure the five illegally occupied regions of Ukraine as Russian territory, Ukraine knows that Russia will attack again. The Russians break the treaty. They always, always do. There's nobody in this world more dishonest than Vladimir Putin. He will always break the deal, no matter what it says, no matter how strongly the terms are written. He promises and promises and promises on his mother's life. He promises repeatedly he will renege on the deal. He will betray you. He will stab you in the back. And you would have to be staggeringly stupid to trust him. You can see what happens to those who do, including his former friend, Prigozhin. So now why is Zelensky changing his mind? Well, events, dear boy, events, as Harold Wilson would have said, partly the military situation deteriorating from a Ukrainian point of view. The last 2 months, they lost more land than they did than in the first 2 months of the war, except than in the first 2 months of the war. So the Russians pushing forward apparently has actually slowed down a little bit in the last week. So the Ukrainians, they are just exhausted. They're not able to do their troop rotations. You're going to have like 48 hours in the front line, 48 hours in the reserve trench, you know, 10 kilometers back. So you can change your clothes, shower, sleep or something like that. It's very hard to sleep in the front line because of the constant bombardment. And there's such a big problem with desertion, and they're having to press gang people on the streets and so on, but you know, there's no alternative. So their casualties are piling up. The Russians, I mean, it's said by the British military that the Russians are suffering 2,000 deaths or men wounded per day, and okay, a few women. The Russian army is only about 4% women, very few of whom serve in combat roles. But methinks this is Ukrainian propaganda, that the casualty figures are not that high. I mean, they're high for the Russians, but not as high as 2,000 a day. But the Russians are certainly careless with the lives of their troops, partly because the regime is genuinely totally inhumane. And as a Russian friend to me says, in Russia, human life has no value. This is a government which, you know, over the 20th century, deliberately murdered millions of its own people. And I do mean ethnic Russians as well as ethnic minorities, as in executing them after show trials, after no trials whatsoever, deliberately starving them to death, using torture on an industrial scale, and on and on. So it's an extremely sadistic regime. And of course, Putin in many ways has gone back to Stalinism after a brief experiment with democracy in the 90s. Other thing is, it may be also to show the Ukrainians and the West that they've got huge human resources and they're willing to go on, even if they're not. To some extent, it's bluff. So as long as you just keep this on till Trump's inauguration on the 20th of January, it might be quite easy. Now, Zelensky's got to show reasonableness, as Trump would see it, this willingness to compromise. And if he's willing to compromise and Putin isn't, then Zelensky's hoping, okay, then Trump will double down and give Ukraine what it needs to survive, if not to win. So if he's obdurate, then the United States just might cut him off. And they know that sheer weight of metal will tell, they'll be crushed. They can scarcely hold the front line as it is. If the United States cuts off all military aid, it is game over for the Ukrainians. And the European countries in Canada and Australia and so on, they are too purblind. They're too parsimonious to invest in their own defense. Like Poland saying, we've given too much, we're going to keep it to defend ourselves. But wait a second. If Ukraine survives, Poland is safe. And if Ukraine falls, Poland is not. So that is the front line for all these other European countries. So there are a number of other issues to discuss. Now, obviously, there are people in Ukraine who won't agree with Zelensky earlier in the war. It would have been terribly unpopular to say that he would be willing to officially or unofficially cede some of this land. And I've been saying more or less since the beginning that Ukraine is never going to get back Crimea. I would like them to, but I just recognize they don't have the military capability and aren't going to. Another thing is, even if there is some ceasefire, even a treaty or whatever, that doesn't automatically mean the sanctions end. Or they say, the Western countries say, we'll relax the sanctions once you withdraw from Crimea. But, you know, how are they going to do that? How are they going to back down from this, given the Russian constitution says Russia can never cede a single millimeter of its land, either to one of the regions becoming independent or joining another sovereign state? It's a crime to even suggest that. Even have a political party by peaceful and legal means seeking to achieve independence of one of the nations within the Russian Federation. No, that is a crime. And it's sickening and hypocritic to see in Western countries where so-called extremism, which means dissent, is criminalized as well. Right. So the other issues are, what about the 17,000 children being kidnapped? Some adults have been kidnapped. Prisoners of war should be released immediately. But Ukraine wants to join NATO. So Zelensky said he only agreed to this to unofficially ceding some of the land if Ukraine is in NATO, because otherwise Russia will attack again when it judges the moment is propitious. But Russia probably found that even more objectionable than losing the land. They really don't want eastern expansion of NATO. It happened a lot. It happened about a dozen countries since the end of the Cold War, three of them former Soviet republics, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. But remember, Ukraine is the birthplace of Russia. Ukraine is so much bigger in area and population than those Baltic republics. So Putin really doesn't want that one. And then the Black Sea would be a NATO lake, you know, even more than it is already, because already got Romania, Bulgaria, and Turkey are all NATO member states. Russia and Ukraine are the only ones that aren't. So the Black Sea would be virtually useless to Russia at that point, because so much of it would be controlled by NATO. So Russia's definitely going to object to that one. Now, I don't see NATO allowing Ukraine in. Because if there's any firing across the ceasefire line, they invoke Article 5. Now, NATO discusses it, supposed to then come and fight on Ukraine's side. But they might say, well, we'll discuss it. We'll take measures short of war or something. But there are 30 NATO member states. Slovakia and Hungary would certainly veto Ukraine. Turkey probably would too. Remember, you need only one country to cast a veto. And that's it. You know, veto, I forbid in Latin, they would blackball the Ukrainians. Well, it wouldn't be blackball. It wouldn't be secret. So I don't see how they would get in. So why should we risk ourselves in the case of NATO? You've got to be a net contributor to our security. And in fact, you'd be jeopardizing us. We don't want to fight their battles for them. So that's a big problem. It could be that other NATO countries on a non-NATO basis form whatever treaty, like of Sweden or Poland or the United Kingdom or Canada, various other countries, maybe even non-NATO countries like Australia. Or South Korea would sign some sort of treaty. But obviously Ukraine would like their troops there on the front line, on the ceasefire line with Russia, maybe along the Belarusian border. If Russia ever attacks, they're going to bump into NATO troops. And Russia would know, or NATO troops or whatever, Ukraine's Western allies, tens of thousands of troops stationed there permanently. But who would take this risk? But maybe that's the only way to prevent a recurrence of the war. But would Putin agree to some sort of deal? Because you say, well, we now control about 20% of Ukraine, and that's it. It was all worth it. Have we denazified the regime? Especially if Zelensky agrees to go, because it's beyond his first presidential term, and because of martial law, they didn't hold an election. Say, okay, well, Putin can pretend that's regime change. And so that was so-called denazification, as you like to say. Demilitarization, well, that ain't going to happen, because it's more militarized than ever. You look at all the military assets that have been donated to Ukraine by NATO and non-NATO countries. Remember, this mission to aid Ukraine is not actually a NATO one, because NATO, under its auspices, doesn't do it. The individual NATO states mostly do. Turkey gives nothing, and Turkey doesn't even sanction Russia at all. That's why there's so many flights to between Russia and Turkey, because it's a main way to transit into and out of Russia, because obviously Russians can't fly directly to any of the sanctioning countries. Right, thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate to PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.